From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and we deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective on this show each week, and a wide range of topics and a wide range of issues. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask on this show is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? How long are you willing to let the things that you hold on to, the things you're in denial about, or even the lack of integrity and the lack of personal power keeps you from living big and living fully and living in a state of peace and integrity. And hopefully every week the topics we deal with this show gives my listeners a chance to push their limits a little bit more and challenge their belief systems and make some decisions about behaviors that they're involved with. Now, this is a live call-in show, and if you're in the Phoenix area, the number is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And if you're one of my listeners listening outside the Phoenix area via the Internet, same phone number. We'd love to have you call in, and that same number is 480-949-1310. Now, to talk for a minute about one of my sponsors and talking about personal power, I want to acknowledge and thank the Rainbow Mobile Notary Services, Charles King, for their sponsorship and support of the show. And what they do is actually, in a very simple and direct way, allow people that sense of personal power. Now, we all know what went on with Terri Schiavo in the last few months. And if a simple piece of paper had been signed and notarized and everybody was past the conflict of what she really wanted and what she didn't want and who was actually in charge of making those decisions, then the conflict that went on throughout this country would not have gone on, and whatever she wanted would have been done peacefully and purposefully. And that's really what one of the things that Rainbow Mobile Notary Services can help you with, and that is preventing problems. Plan now, prevent problems later in terms of having living wills, estate planning, trust, medical powers of attorney, and so much more. Just by calling Rainbow Mobile Notary Services, you actually can have them come to you, and sometimes even with the blank forms to fill in, since some of these are really rather simple, to notarize them so that you can make copies and get them to the people that need to know, from your medical professionals to your family members and loved ones. And so if you want more information on how to set up an appointment and to have them answer any questions you might have about living wills and how to go about enacting them, you can call Charles King at 480-518-2090. That's 480-518-2090. Or you can visit their website at www.rainbowprof.com. That's rainbowprof, P-R-O-F, as in professional, rainbowprof.com. And again, I want to thank Charles and his company for supporting the show. Now, today's show, I'm very excited about my guest today. We're going to be talking in a minute with Steve May. Some of you may know him as a former representative in the Arizona State House of Representatives. And the topic of today's show is the insanity of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the military policy dealing with gays and lesbians and bisexuals in the military, and something that was actually implemented under the Clinton administration. And I know even the word Clinton gets a lot of people's backs up, but I really, you know, being a gay man myself, I really, you know, there are a lot of people in the gay community that are very upset with the policy that came under his tenure. But my personal feeling is the most we could have expected was for him to get the dialogue going. And that's exactly what he did. His intention was actually to allow gays, lesbians, and bisexuals to serve freely. But sign of the times and the Congress and the fact that this was something that was new and radical, you need to take steps. And that's my belief system. While it's far from being a good policy, far from being a perfect policy, it was a step towards something better. Now, that still meant that there were a lot of people that had a lot of difficulty under that policy, and we're going to be talking, like I said, with one of those individuals, Steve May, in a bit. And, again, everything happens by steps. That's my belief system. So to get started with this today, I want to welcome Steve May to the show today. You there, Steve?
Good afternoon.
Well, I'm glad you made it back from your trip and that you're here joining us today.
Well, I'm glad I made it, too, and it's a beautiful day in Phoenix.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Tell us a little bit more. I know that, as I said, you were in the Arizona House of Representatives as a Republican. From
Is that
East
a dirty
Phoenix,
word?
Scottsdale, huh?
Is that a dirty word on this show?
You know, not at all. I mean, during the last campaign, I actually gave the Kerry campaign four Saturdays of my show, and I interviewed even Peggy Carey. I'm definitely a Democrat. But I also believe in unconditional positive regard, unconditional love for my fellow men and women. And I have a friend who is a therapist, but also an actor. His name is Charlie Lang. And he appeared as a on The West Wing in a recurring role a number of seasons ago as a closeted gay Republican.
Hmm. And there are many of them in the White House, I'll tell you that.
I don't doubt that. And the writers of The West Wing wrote that part so well. And he actually explained to I'm forgetting his name right now, one of the main characters, because he confronted him. He said, how can you be a Republican and how can you be gay? I mean, the two. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but when he got done giving his speech over drinks to the member of the White House, I actually came away for the first time understanding how someone can be gay and Republican. But maybe you can explain it, and we can start with that.
Well,
to put you on the spot.
Well, I was born that way. Can't you just love me for who I am?
Uh-huh. Well, it's the same thing about being gay, isn't it?
Exactly. But I think it's a matter of, you know, where do we, you know, what is important to us and what do we value? And I think the historical Republican Party values individual liberty and freedom and a strong national defense and freedom in the sense that there's personal freedom, but there's also economic freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, I have an innate distrust of government.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want government to solve my problems for me. I want government to leave me alone. And there are certain things government should do, but those things are very few, in my opinion. And I think that's where the parties truly differ. The problem is, over the past maybe 25 years, which is almost most of my life, the Republican Party has been hijacked by people who don't believe in freedom, but people who truly want to impose a theocracy on this country. And that's the problem. I think that's why a lot of gay people and others look at gay Republicans as either, you know, oxymoronic or hypocrites because of what the Republican Party looks like today.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the historical Republican Party. It's not the values that, you know, we were founded upon, and it's not what most Republicans hold dear.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe in what the Republican Party has become today, which is a party which seeks to control people and to impose a theocracy on what is supposed to be a representative democracy.
Well, I think then the natural question I think most people would have for you at this point, which I'm going to ask you, is how do you function within today's Republican Party, knowing that that's who they are? I won't ask you who you voted for in the last election.
Well, I'll tell you, I publicly endorsed and gave money to and supported John Kerry.
Uh-huh.
Because I think George Bush just went too far. Now, I supported Bush in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when someone decides to use me and people like me as a political wedge issue for purely political gain, that person is no longer a statesman. That person is a pure self-indulgent politician, and I'm not going to support a person like that. And that's basically the federal marriage amendment that he decided. You know, the man had 12, in 4 years as president of the United States, he held 12 press conferences. One of them was to supposedly defend America from people like me.
Right.
From expressing our love in a legal sense. And that's just ridiculous. In my opinion, it's an abuse of power, an abuse of the office. And for crying out loud, you know, we have fought and died to protect the freedoms of our own people for 200 plus years, and we've done it on our own soil, and we've done it on other people's soil, and then this guy and people, you know, who support him want to abuse our Constitution, which we fought and died for,
mm-hmm.
to supposedly protect America from me. You know, for crying out loud, you know, I serve my country in uniform, I serve my country in public office,
mm-hmm.
and I am a great threat to this. Such a threat to this country that needs to be an amendment to the United States Constitution, you know, that's just too much.
But you see, what you're saying to me right now is exactly the feeling I had when Charlie Lang's character on The West Wing got done talking. It was a complete and utter understanding, number one, that there's, in any group, I mean, for a lot of the radio conservative hosts to say, anyone who's not one of them is a liberal, you know, left-wing, trying to control the world and the media and everything else. You know, there's a range there, that there are, within the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community, there are Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, and the whole range. There are, you know, just like the stereotypes don't fit, and we need to honor the differences. The same thing that I keep saying about this country. And that's what you're saying, you know, certain people are trying to make a theocracy out of this as opposed to honoring. This country was really born honoring the differences.
Right. And it's a different plane. I just, like you had mentioned earlier, I just returned from Eastern Europe. I was in Hungary and the Czech Republic and Austria. And they have a different style of government. I mean, historically they do, at least, you know, in the last few centuries anyway. They didn't have the same freedoms that we had, and I think that was the impetus for, you know, our founding fathers to create what we have here.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately now we have people who are in control of the Republican Party who don't honor that, who don't
right.
believe in freedom, and they want to see something. You know, it's a terrible thing to say, but we really do have, you know, the tyranny of the American Taliban controlling the Republican Party.
You know, I say that all the time. It's the same thing. If they get what they want, our country will be no different than the fundamentalist Muslim countries where there are no rights and it's a theocracy, and our country just would be a fundamentalist Christian with the same sense of marginalizing women and marginalizing people who don't agree with what they do.
And that is absolutely what they want. I mean, I mean, this is me speaking from experience of spending 4 years with people in the state legislature here in Arizona who want to achieve that.
Yeah.
Is their goal.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned Eastern Europe and stuff. One of the things I did in the early 90s was founded a nonprofit called the International AIDS Project, and for about 3 years I was supporting and actually taking American educators and people with AIDS and stuff to Russia and the former Soviet Union. We were before the epidemic really hit there, we were trying to do some prevention and education and help get organizations consciously aware of how they can actually talk to their own people. And so I really got to experience the former Soviet Union as the Soviet Union during the breakup and the chaos after the breakup.
Wow.
And one of the shows I did when Reagan had passed away was many people were saying goodbye to Reagan. I'm saying good riddance. Because one of the things that I was acutely aware of was he made the grandstand about tearing down the wall and everything else. I mean, he's a film actor, and he knows how to present it, but he had no plan for after the breakup.
Right.
So what happened was our government allowed all these American corporations to go in there and literally rape that country. So all the goodwill that we had with the individuals was totally blown because there was no plan. This is a group of people that never really knew democracy
right.
in their entire history for the most part. And now you're saying, okay, be a democracy, and nobody's going in there and actually supporting the infrastructure and helping to heal the infrastructure while they're learning how to do it. And that alone would take two generations.
Well, and I agree, and it seems like the road to democracy is always kleptocracy, and that's what happened in the Soviet Union. And, you know, I spent some time in Nigeria back in, I think it was 1991, when they were trying to transition from what had been a post-colonialism was a military rule, and they were trying to transition to democracy. And, you know, for crying out loud, they just weren't ready for it. You know,
right.
the people didn't understand what democracy was, and they were going to vote for whoever paid them the most to vote
right.
for them. And democracy isn't easy, and it's not a concept that everybody inherently understands. And this is the same problem we have in Iraq now.
Exactly. That's where I was going with it. It's the same thing. There was no plan afterwards, and you're asking people who for generations never knew anything
never
but
knew
dictatorship
it.
To all of a sudden know how to do it.
Right.
And to do it our way as opposed to to figuring out how democracy can be translated within the context of the cultural sensibilities.
I agree. I mean, it's a strange patronizing American ideal
yes.
that we can go anywhere in the world and impose our system on them, and it's going to be better than what they have. And
One of the things when I read your bio that I actually was very excited about is that your bachelor's was in psychology and politics.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I know that my bachelor's was in sociology with a minor in psych and anthropology, and it's really served me well to have that kind of vision of, even when I'm working one-on-one with a client, to see it in the sociological and anthropological context, not just the psychology of it. How has that psychology background fared you? And we still even haven't gotten into the don't ask, don't tell, but I think everything we're talking about is laying a foundation for that discussion. How has that psychology background helped you in terms of where your life's led in terms of politics?
Well, my psych work was mostly organizational, so it was mostly cultural, business, leadership type work, other than I did do an internship at an autism clinic, which was fascinating. But mostly was, business and leadership work. And I think it helps me in everything that I do because I understand better how organizations, be they large or small, develop. And it helps me understand where people are coming from culturally and what they're bringing to the table from their own experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so important to understand where people are coming from because we all have seeing the world in a different way.
Right.
And that certainly influences how we think and how we behave.
Right. And what I think I hear you saying also is the concept that every organization is actually a family unit, as dysfunctional as it may be, but they all have the dynamics that need to be addressed. And, there are similar roles in an organization and in a political party and in a country's politics that really can be narrowed down to family dynamics.
It's absolutely true. It's true.
So speaking of family dynamics, let's talk about the military's family dynamics. It's as dysfunctional as any. I think it always has been and probably in every country, almost always will be. You served in the military for how long? Is it part of your family history also to have done that?
No, it's not part of my family history, but I did it for a variety of reasons. Well, I wanted the leadership training, and they also paid for my schooling, which was, they paid for my schooling and gave me leadership training and then gave me what I thought I was going to do was going to be a career military officer, which is why I started the Navy program. I was actually inspired to do that and encouraged to do that by John McCain, whom I've known since I was a little kid, and I spent 63 days underwater on a ballistic missile submarine back in the days of the Cold War and decided I didn't want to be underwater that long again.
Sometimes we do things to find out that's not what we want.
Not what we want.
That's still a good experience to help you narrow things down.
But I'll tell you, it was horrendously boring. And the submarine goes at about 3 kilometers an hour, and we just basically go in a circle waiting for an order to fire missiles at Russia was the whole thing. And so after 63 days of not having real air, I decided to switch to the Army and not be a career officer. I was planning to go into the reserve system. So anyway, I served, after ROTC, 4 years in college, I served 2 years, 3 months, and 8 days on active duty as a nuclear, biological, and chemical defense officer, most of the time at Fort Riley, Kansas. Mm-hmm. And I served in the 1st Infantry Division, which is known by a lot of people as the Big Red One. It's a very storied unit that did great service in World War II. Mm-hmm. And then I got out of the military and became a civilian and got elected to public office and did my own thing and joined my father's company, actually, and went on my merry way. And then 1999, when we thought we were going into Kosovo for a major ground conflict, I was one of 3,000 people that got called back in to service unexpectedly,
mm-hmm.
and as a reservist. And so I went to duty. And the thing that was kind of odd about that is that I was already elected and in public office and widely known as a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
And then they called me back in.
Now, how long had you been aware of your homosexuality or out of the closet, maybe not publicly, but at least in terms of family and friends?
Well, I came back to my parents after my freshman year of college.
Okay, so even before you went into, you were already in ROTC, but not officially full-time in the military yet.
Right. I was already and like a lot of people going to the military, they get contracted or obligated to some period of military service.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to really understanding that they're gay. So that was I was under contract already.
Mm-hmm.
And then I figured out, oh, my goodness, I'm gay.
Okay.
And so
but
I was kind
you
of
still
stunned.
Wanted to stay with the military career.
I wanted to and also didn't have a choice.
Okay.
Because I was obligated already. But
okay.
I'll tell you, I graduated in 1993, so just after Clinton came into office. And
uh-huh.
during Clinton's election, he had talked about changing the ban on gay serving in the military.
Well, that must have excited you.
It did, and I talked to all of my fellow ROTC cadets because they all knew that I was gay, and I was
mm-hmm.
fairly open about it in college. And they all said, "Hey, this is great." You know, once Clinton won, they said, "Hey, this is great news for you. This can be no problem. You don't have to worry about this anymore."
Yeah.
I thought, "Hey, yeah, that is a good."
So, is it safe to assume the Republican voted for Clinton too?
No, I didn't.
Ah, okay.
I voted for Bush back then.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know why.
You don't have to apologize.
Yeah, well.
I hear it in your voice.
There were other issues
yeah, I'm
concerned about. We really thought, I mean, me and all my buddies, we all thought that this would be a non-issue. And then Don't Ask, Don't Tell was implemented in April of 93, and I was commissioned as an officer in May.
Uh-huh.
And on active duty 2 days later. And so at that time, no one quite knew what Don't Ask, Don't Tell meant.
Yeah, I still think today they don't know what it means.
No, it's implemented in very different ways. It depends on your commander. I mean, it's always implemented in different ways. Commanders have the ability to turn away from it and not investigate it. And I'll tell you that after, we haven't talked about what happened to me, but after my whole issue played out, my commander wished that she had never pursued it because she didn't have to. But it was just an awful process, I think, for everybody involved.
Uh-huh.
But this whole Don't Ask, Don't Tell issue is awful for everyone in the military because in the military, you're supposed to be absolutely honest with the people you serve.
Yeah, that's what builds the trust.
It builds trust, and you have to have that integrity, and you've got to know that the person next to you is going to kill the bad guy for you or is going to, watch your back. And
right.
I mean, you really do take care of each other.
Right.
And, I mean, in every way, whether it's eating, sleeping, you really take care of your battle buddies.
Right.
There's a your sexuality is fairly fundamental to who you are as a human. And
mm-hmm.
the problem, when I first went into the military, I didn't think it was that big of a deal because I was young. But as you start to develop relationships, it's a problem because you have to hide those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And, my buddies would go out and party at the bars or whatever, and they'd ask me what I did, and I'd lie. I'd say I went stayed home or whatever, when the truth is I went to a gay bar.
Uh-huh.
But it's even worse than that in that, there are gay softball teams, and you've got a lot you can't tell your friends about the softball team you play on.
So even though you were playing on them, nobody found out about it?
Well, I lied to some people and didn't lie to others. My close friends in the military I came out to after some point. And they kind of felt burdened by this knowledge.
Right.
Because, for them, the question of integrity is, do they need to disclose this to my commander or keep it secret?
Right.
Do they protect me or protect or follow the policy?
And protect themselves, too,
protect
because
themselves.
If it comes out that they knew, then aren't they also in a little bit of trouble?
I don't know that anyone's ever formally gotten into a lot of trouble for it, but I think they definitely feel, you know, a cognitive dissonance, if you will, in that there is a policy, and we're, you know, in the military, you're trained to follow the law and follow every rule,
right.
Live by the book, which says you can't be gay or talk about being gay, yet they know that I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they're in a complex decision-making process as to whether or not they need to disclose this, or are they essentially violating the law by not telling?
Right.
So it's difficult, I think.
Well, getting back to the family unit, though, too, I know when mm-hmm. I told my brother in college that I was gay, it became a burden for him, too. Does he tell my parents? Does he not tell my parents? You know, what's going on with that? And I mean, the title of my show is Tell the Truth Faster. I mean,
right.
it's addressing everything you're talking about, you know, because anytime we're holding secrets and we ask someone to hold it with us, it becomes a burden, because part of it is, you know, I mean, there was a time when my brother was in his mid-teens, was doing things that I knew could get him hurt and get him in trouble. And I was in that quandary, do I tell my parents and save my brother, you know, or do I keep it to myself and keep his trust? You know, it's the same thing. It's, we're talking about family system. We're talking about these were your brothers and
sisters
in the military.
Absolutely.
And, you know, go ahead.
I'll give you an example of a horrible situation I had to deal with, and that I had I was the executive officer of a company in my last job, which basically means I'm the second guy in command. And my commander and I were very close. Great guy. Well, he had his first child and asked me to be the godfather.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he didn't know that I was gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, am I supposed to tell this guy that I'm gay or keep it a secret? Well, he's my commander. So if I tell him, then I burden him with the obligation as a commander, especially,
right,
to prosecute me.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at the same time, he's asking me to be his first child's godfather, and I don't want to lie to him.
What'd you do?
I didn't tell him.
And how did he react when he found out?
He was so extremely supportive. He found out through the media.
Mm-hmm.
When my whole story became, you know, national news, that's how he found out. And I felt so awful. But he called me and he said, because I had to go through this military court system, he said, I want to be there for you. I'll testify. You know, tell me what I can do.
Yeah.
Well, the military wouldn't let him testify, but he stood by.
Why wouldn't they let him testify?
They wouldn't let me bring any witnesses. It was a horrible. They brought their own witnesses, denied me every single request for any witnesses.
Okay, so what I want you to do right now is talk briefly about exactly what Don't Ask, Don't Tell means, and then how I really want to hear how you were treated and how you coped with that. What you just said about the fact that they put certain restrictions on you in terms of your own defense and credibility. So first of all, tell my listeners exactly what Don't Ask, Don't Tell means.
Don't Ask, Don't Tell is truly a horrific policy for the military, and I think it's much worse than what we had prior to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Prior to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we had a policy in the military that said, and it was simply a military policy, not a federal law,
mm-hmm.
that said you cannot be gay and serve in the military. Mm-hmm. Well, there were maybe 200 to 300 discharges a year under the old policy.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Clinton came in, he wanted to reverse the policy, but he lost control of the issue, and it became a federal law passed in Congress.
Right.
So it can only be overturned by Congress or the courts. But that became Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which was you can be in the military and gay as long as you lie about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is, in the old days, there had to be proof that you engage in homosexual acts. And under the current policy, you can be discharged simply for saying that you are gay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's become, in the old days, it was an issue of behavior, and now it's an issue of speech. So if you tell your mother that you're gay, you violated the policy and you can be, or the law, and you can be kicked out of the military. And that has happened, where it's simply a matter of speech. In the old days, it required proof of an act. So it's really quite awful. And discharges have increased from where they were, they were 200 to 300, now they're 1,200 a year.
Wow.
Now, that's gone down last year because of the war. There people aren't, historically, every time we've gone to war, discharges on gay issues decrease dramatically.
Right, because they need the bodies.
Because they need the bodies.
Right.
Which is kind of silly in the sense that the whole idea of this ban is that gays can't serve in the military, but the reality in practice is they can serve in the military during wartime, but not peace.
Well, which is ironic because I think one of the arguments is that during wartime, people need to be able to count on them, and they don't want guys in foxholes together worrying about who's coming on to them.
Right, but the reality
is... So here they are in wartime, and it's okay for gays and lesbians to fight and die for their country, but in peacetime, it's not okay for them to serve.
Which just means the policy makes no sense. I mean, it makes
right.
no sense. It's just, it's not real. And the other thing that I think people need to know is that we are one of the few Western nations that has, well, we're the only Western nation, other than Turkey, that has a ban on gays serving in the military. You know,
that has an out-and-out ban?
Yeah. I mean, NATO. We're the only NATO country, other than Turkey, that doesn't allow gays to serve openly in the military.
Well, I knew about Israel. I knew about England. But I wasn't aware that it was that widespread in terms of...
Oh, we're the only one. Yeah. Other than Turkey and the U.S., it's it. I mean,
wow.
it's nonsense. And... For example, in Britain, they were a lot like us. They resisted this change for many years, and eventually the European court forced them to change.
Mm-hmm.
And not the British court, but the European court. And I think it was 2000. Of course, there were predictions that, the military is going to be ruined, and people are going to stop signing up for the military because of this, and people are going to resign because of this. And there are all these concerns, but they had no choice because of what the European Union had ruled. And so they changed in 2000. And I'll tell you what happened. Nothing. Nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And just this past year, the Royal Navy has been recruiting through gay magazines,
mm-hmm.
specifically recruiting gay people to join the Navy,
uh-huh.
as if they need help to do that. But, but
amazing. Well, it is a theme song from the Village People.
Right. But they went from resistance and this fear of, the sky is falling, to now they're going after gay people to recruit them in.
Well, it's just like a lot of police departments now directly recruit. You know, I know that here in L.A., there's direct recruitment within the gay and lesbian community
in Phoenix,
for officers.
In Phoenix, there's direct recruitment, and we have a gay community resource person from the police department, but it was only, what was it, maybe it was... The late 90s,
mm-hmm.
the late 90s, where there was a prohibition on gays serving the police force. And they would ask people during the interview if they had ever engaged in homosexual activity.
Mm-hmm.
And that would preclude them from joining the police force.
Well, do you think the shift that may be happening first within police departments will bode well for what will happen ultimately in the military?
I think so. Here's the challenge. You know, the majority of Americans now... not the case 5 years ago, but the majority of Americans today, by almost 70%, believe that gays should be allowed to serve in the military.
Uh-huh.
The majority of junior service members, and this is the first time this year, believe that gays should be allowed to serve in the military.
Mm.
So things have definitely changed. The problem is, because of what Clinton did, I mean, it wasn't his fault so much. I mean, he screwed it up. But now we have a federal law to contend with. It's not a policy that the military can change.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Congress has to change it.
But we're hearing reports now that the Department of Defense is actually talking about eliminating the policy. Is that true?
Is it
Congress or the Department of Defense?
Well, there are always people who have said that there should be changes. We have a number of flag officers or generals and admirals who said we should change the policy now. And there are people in the Department of Defense who said we should. However, Department of Defense doesn't matter. It's a federal law, so Congress
uh-huh.
has to make that change.
But there are a lot of retired and current generals and other high-end military people that actually have signed petitions and advertisings that say that this should be repealed and this should be allowed.
That's correct. People finally are. The problem is a lot of those military folks are afraid to speak out in opposition to the status quo.
Right.
But there are a number of very high-ranking people who have come out and said that this policy has to change.
Well, it's no different than what we're seeing at the Air Force Academy with the fundamentalist religious instruction going on and the control and how people were afraid to speak out. But, there's a need now for sensitivity training at all the academies in terms of religious diversity at the academies.
Absolutely.
But there's been no... I would assume, and from what I've read, there's been, since the Don't Ask, Don't Tell has gone into, there's been no sensitivity training to sexual orientation issues within the military.
I don't know if that's the case or not. I'll tell you that when I was in The reserves, most recently, we had, we didn't call it sensitivity training, we called it something else, but I can't remember what it was. But I actually had to give some classes, and I certainly talked about the sexual orientation, so of course I was out. But in our directives from the Pentagon, we were to talk about sexual orientation issues. Because I think everyone recognizes that gays are in the military.
Uh-huh.
We're just not supposed to talk about it.
Right.
But we did talk about, you know.
Yeah, the elephant in the living room.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows it's there, but you're not supposed to be there. But
right.
We have to talk about, you know, not beating people, especially in the aftermath of Barry Winchell, where this guy who was suspected of being gay was brutally murdered.
Mm-hmm.
We did talk about, you know, respect for everybody.
Right. Well, something I got off the website for SLDN.org.
Mm-hmm.
Says that in 2000, a report came out, and it says, the Department of Defense Inspector General survey of 75,000 service members finds widespread anti-gay climate in the military. The report finds that 80% said they had heard derogatory remarks about gay men, lesbians, and bisexuals during the past year. 37% they had witnessed or experienced targeted incidents of harassment, 9% of whom reported witnessing threats, and 5% of whom reported witnessing physical assaults. And 57% reported they had not received training on don't ask, don't tell, don't pursue, don't harass. So 57% said that they had not received any consciousness-raising or information about it.
Well, the good news is that 43% did.
Right.
So
that's true. I like your optimism.
It's a hard thing. When I was on active duty, right after Don't Ask, Don't Tell was implemented, you know, no one knew what that meant or how to implement. We had many meetings on this, and everyone was just confused about it. But the other thing I'll tell you in the military's defense is that, you know, the military, we're very busy. There's lots of things we have to do, and
right.
You know, you're always preparing for war, and now they're in war, and you know, it's hard to do everything. And
mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of
did you say they're always praying for war?
Preparing.
Preparing. Oh, okay.
You
thank
pray
you.
For peace. It's prepare for war.
Yeah, we're prepare. I thought you said praying.
No.
Okay. Sorry.
But so, there, I mean, there are a lot of other things on the agenda, on the military plate, that has to be prioritized.
Right.
But and the other thing about that you mentioned the stats on kind of anti-gay harassment or whatever is that happens in the real world too.
Of course.
And the military is simply a reflection of the diversity of our nation. And one of the beautiful things about the military is that you bring all these people together who you'd never see together in any other place,
mm-hmm.
and different socioeconomic backgrounds, different races, religions, everything. And if you have good leadership in a unit, you can create a cohesive team. And you
right.
end up loving the people that you work with. I mean, you sleep with these people, you eat with them, you shower with them. I mean, you become so close. And one of the things I miss most about my military service is that the closeness of just your friends.
Mm-hmm.
You really do take care of each other. You really do love each other. It's just amazing. And what we've been able to do historically is we've been able to do this, you know, to integrate women and various races and everything else into these cohesive units.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do the same thing with gay people. You know, right now, one of the arguments against gay serving military is that, and this is what Colin Powell said, oh, those boys from the South just can't imagine or wouldn't be able to survive living with gay people in their barracks.
Well, at one point, they couldn't imagine having blacks in the military
right.
for the same reason.
It's just silly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now, maybe if you did a survey of some of these boys from the South, whoever these people are, and ask them that question, they might say, oh, no, I don't want to live with a homosexual. But once you ask them, okay, but what about Steve May? Oh, well, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
When you ask about, once they meet a person and they humanize that homosexual, it's totally different.
Right.
It's the same thing in politics. You know, if you do a survey and ask voters, will you vote for a homosexual person? The majority of Republicans especially say no.
Mm-hmm.
I want elections.
Right.
Because there are other issues. Once they come to know you as a person, you're not just a homosexual. But if you're just a homosexual, they don't like you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different once they know you. And
right.
that's the same
and
thing.
That's why it's so important. And this is about personal power. Someone like you that's willing to take a stand and be who you are in the world and live your life the way you choose to live your life, which, you know, from everything I know about you, although, you know, I don't know you personally, is that you're a person that's dedicated to integrity and to honesty and to personal power and bringing your community and your society up to that level of performance also.
And I'll tell you, when all my whole Donuts Don't Tell thing started happening, I got emails from people I'd served with. I hadn't seen or heard from them in years. I got emails and phone calls from people from all over the country I served with saying, wow, I didn't know that you were gay, but, you know, if I have to go to war, I want you to come with me.
Yeah. Well, that's, I guess, the ultimate compliment within the military.
It is.
Yeah, definitely.
It is.
Now, there was another report in 1988 I got in the same thing. It says, a report prepared for the Pentagon by PERSEREC noted that studies of homosexual veterans make clear that having a same gender or opposite gender orientation is unrelated to job performance in the same way as is being left-handed or right-handed.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Defense attempted to bury the report until Representative Jerry Studs successfully obtained copies of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1993, the RAND Corporation published a 500-page Pentagon commissioned report on gays in the military, finding no credible evidence to exclude lesbians, gays, and bisexuals from the armed forces. Neither the Pentagon nor Congress adopted the finding of the report in crafting Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah, there is no legitimate reason for this policy, and everybody knows it. The people who have imposed this law upon us and seek to protect it have a much broader agenda. They're really not concerned about military readiness, although our opponents, you know, have created these institutions called the Center for Military Readiness and things like that. They don't care about military readiness. They fear social acceptance of homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are fighting to keep homosexuals in the closet. I mean, I've been on, you know, TV shows where they said, why can't you just stay in the closet? Why can't you just keep quiet? Why do you have to talk about it?
Right.
They don't want us to tell the truth.
Right. I don't mind you being gay as long as you don't impose yourself on me.
Yeah, or they say just keep it quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you have to talk about it? Well, why shouldn't I talk about it? You walk down the aisles in the mall holding hands with your opposite sex partner. Why can't I do the same thing? You wear a wedding ring that tells me you are a heterosexual. You have a picture of your wife on your desk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you pushing this down my throat?
Mm-hmm.
And they never think of it that way. They
say, of course.
Wow, I've never thought of it. But suddenly when I say I have a partner, boom, I'm shoving something down their throat. It's crazy. And
now you are in a relationship.
Yeah.
And it's been long term?
This one, 2.5 years.
Well.
So keep rooting for us.
Say again?
Keep rooting for us.
I always am, gay or straight. I mean, you know, if you're living in integrity and living with honesty, it certainly bodes well for a relationship to last.
Yeah.
And your partner, I'm assuming, is supportive of your public persona.
It's hard.
How does it impact him?
It's just, I think it's tough because anyone, you know, I do have a public life, and I think it's tough on anyone who values some amount of privacy and some time. You know, I'm not home a lot, and I think it's hard on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly when my whole issue became a national issue, that's where I really lost my first relationship, which was 5 years, was, it was just too hard. It was the invasion of privacy and, being gone a lot and losing any, losing any sense of privacy.
It's tough.
And, you know, when you're sitting, you know, when TV trucks roll up to your house at 4 o'clock in the morning to do a satellite feed to New York and People Magazine comes in to take pictures of your home and your dog. I mean, it's just it's a little bit unsettling for someone who's...
Well, I think anybody in public life has those stresses to a great degree, but when you add the fact that one of the reasons all that's happening is something so personal, it must really add a whole different level of stress to a relationship.
It's very personal, and it's almost silly. It's like, okay, all this excitement and attention, whatever, is because I happen to be gay, and I'm in the military. What is the big deal?
Right.
You know, why is this interesting to people?
Mm-hmm.
And I would always say, you know, 20 years from now, people can look back and say, what was the big deal?
Mm-hmm.
Why did people care? But
now, you're currently no longer in the House of Representatives, correct?
No, I'm not. You know, I lost my last election by 58 votes out of 25,000. Yeah, 25,000 cast. And I didn't see it coming. I didn't see the far right my own party had mobilized. I mean, I lost in the primary. They really mobilized against me and did a great campaign against me I didn't see coming. But
wow,
it was a very close election.
Are you intending on going back into something like that?
Maybe at some point. You know, right now I'm the co-chairman of the Arizona Human Rights Fund,
mm-hmm.
Which people can look at ARF.org, A-H-R-F.org, which
right.
We do the political work for the LGBT community. In the state.
Actually, I just got the mailing about your upcoming event on June 18th.
Oh, good, the big dinner. Yeah, that's
yes.
going to be an excellent event. It's always a lot of fun. We have Keith Boykin's going to be speaking. He works
uh-huh.
for Bill Clinton. And Governor Napolitano will be there, and she'll be speaking. And John Sperling is the honorary chairman of the event. John owns the Apollo Group, which owns the University of Phoenix, Western International University. One of our local billionaires will be there to support us.
Oh, excellent. So. And if people want to attend, they could go to what website?
I go to ARF.org, A-H-R-F, for ArizonaHumanRightsFund.org.
Okay.
And they can look up information on the event. And
they could also advertise in the program and all that stuff at this point and make donations to the silent auction.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's going to be a great event, about 1,200 people.
Okay. Actually,
and it's not black tie, thank goodness. So you don't have to rent a tux.
Okay.
Black tie
well, I'm actually hoping to come into Phoenix for it that weekend.
Oh, good. Good.
You
meet a lot of great people.
And one other point that we actually haven't made, and then I want to talk about one other issue with you, is now you talked about before it was like 300 or 400 each year that were thrown out of the military because of homosexuality, and that since Don't Ask, Don't Tell has come into play, it's been closer to 1,200, 1,300.
Right.
The other thing that people don't get is these are all people that the government and the military has invested years of training, thousands and thousands of dollars into their education and training, and I mean, I think in one case there were like interpreters in Arabic who were thrown out when there was a shortage of translators and interpreters for that purpose. You know, it's like it's not just a cultural thing. It's the fact that the armed services are losing not just the bodies but the investment in these people's education and training.
Right. In February 25th, I believe it was, the GAO, the Government Accounting Office from the federal government, came out with a report detailing the cost of kicking people out. And I can't remember what the number was, but it was hundreds of millions of dollars.
Oh, I'm sure.
That Don't Ask, Don't Tell costs the military every year. And it makes no sense.
Yeah.
There's no rational basis for this law. And I think everybody knows it, but the people who support it are those who want homosexuals to stay in the closet.
Right.
And it's a much broader agenda. I mean, it's the same agenda that seeks to deny homosexuals the right to work.
And marry.
And marry. And do any number of other things. It's,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same folks who tried to protect the sodomy laws
mm-hmm.
that said essentially you can't engage in homosexual sex,
mm-hmm.
which was, of course, thrown out by the Supreme Court
yeah.
a couple years ago.
What's your reaction to Arthur Finkelstein, the gay Republican advisor who actually, you know, has campaigned and helped the fundamentalist Republicans in dealing with so many issues, actually went and took advantage of the Massachusetts law on gay marriage?
Well, I'll tell you, I know a lot of people like him. I do not know him, but I know a lot of people like him in both parties, not just Republicans, but people who are willing to accept the dollar and ignore their own integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, I mean, it's not just gay people. There are a lot of people who work for money and not truth.
Say that again.
A lot of people who work for money and not truth. And it's, mm-hmm. I think it's sad. And, you know, I have people who are friends who, you know, I've got a friend who worked for George Bush and voted for John Kerry.
Uh-huh.
And I just think that's disgusting.
That's astounding.
It's gross. And Finkelstein's in the same boat where he is somehow able to divorce his personal self from his professional self.
I'll talk about schizophrenic.
Well, and I know people in the White House who are closeted, and some who are not closeted.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand how they can do what they do being who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And feel okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, I met with, I have to tell you, he was an ambassador. And he said to me, that the countries where there's this hypocrisy of, you know, you can't talk about being gay and they're very closeted, he says, I find it charming. I thought, what?
Hey. I would, as a therapist, I would say he definitely grew up in a household where things weren't talked about and repression was the mode of operation.
Yeah.
And to him, that's very homey and family-like and charming.
Well, and when I first got elected, a lot of my gay friends said, you know, just keep quiet, don't say anything about being gay, whatever. And then one of my legislative colleagues basically attacked the gay community. And I was told, just keep quiet. Don't say anything. Don't do anything. And I said, you know, why am I here?
Uh-huh.
If I'm not going to stand up and speak in defense of myself, my family, my community.
Well, God bless you for
and
that.
So I spoke, and they just thought I was just awful.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of being out in the world, being a homosexual is not all of what you do.
No, I'm not a professional homosexual.
And it's certainly not what you do for a living.
I've never made a penny being a homosexual. There are those
who
do, but
I'm not one.
Opposed
to some others that we know have prostituted themselves for smaller things. You're a businessman, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Okay, this is your chance. It's called Wisdom Natural Brands.
Wisdom Natural Brands. We have a variety of consumer brands. My main brand is called Sweetleaf. So you can go to sweetleaf.com. And find the world's only all-natural, zero-calorie, zero-glycemic sweetener that's sold in health food stores, grocery stores all over the country in the natural food section or in the supplement section. So,
and how did you end up doing this for a living?
My dad discovered an herb from Paraguay. Actually, a Peace Corps worker gave him this little herb.
What herb was it?
It's called stevia, and it's not named after me nor me after it. I just want to get that out. But it's called stevia. And then he discovered this, and then when I came into the business in 95, I kind of made it a little bit more consumer-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you find it in little green packets, and it's just a natural herb that you can put into your coffee or tea. You can bake with it, whatever, but it's sweet leaf stevia.
Wow.
It's kind of cool.
How does it affect, like, diabetics? Is this something
it's safe for diabetics. It's zero glycemic, unlike
things
like Splenda or Equal. Those are actually high glycemic, higher than sugar, because they're 95% dextrose. This has no, and dextrose is a corn sugar. Mm-hmm. This has no sugar in it whatsoever. It's got the fiber in it.
But it's natural. It's not chemicals.
No chemicals. All natural. It's the only, you know, people think Splenda is natural, and it's not. Splenda is a chemical.
Mm-hmm.
Blended with dextrose, which is corn sugar. But stevia, our Sweetleaf Stevia Plus product, is all natural, zero chemicals, zero calories. It's safe for baking. Like, you can't bake with Equal. You can bake with this product. But if you go to sweetleaf.com, you can see, you know, recipes and all the products.
And they could also get it at wisdomnaturalbrands.com.
Correct.
And there's a whole website, and it lists all the other products that you sell and talks more about the company itself.
Yeah, we do Wisdom of the Ancients Herbal Tea, which is really what my dad started, and another tea line and supplements. And
well, this is great. I mean, I'm a firm believer in holistic approaches to things and also, you know, herbs and anything natural and complementary that kind of brings us more into balance, body, mind, and spirit. So this is certainly, I'm a baker, too. I'm going to go out and try baking with some of this stuff.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. And we have cookbooks, too.
Okay.
There's recipes on the website. Molly Katzen is a fairly well-known vegetarian cookbook author, and she's done a bunch of recipes for us, and they're on the website. And there's even on the
website. That's good to know, too, because I'm vegetarian. So.
Oh, good.
Good. You can sign up for a recipe. You never know when you open one door how many others start opening. So.
Okay.
Last word of wisdom. We have about a minute left. Anything else you want to say or impart to my listeners?
Well, I do like the title of your show and the theme, which is tell the truth faster, and I think it does make a big difference in your life. It's not easy, and it's scary, and I was at a meeting where I kind of told my whole history, my whole story, and someone said, "Well," and I said, "Yeah, you all need to come out too, because the most important, what changes people's opinions on our issues from a political perspective is when people know us."
Mm-hmm.
65% of people who know gay people support gay marriage and other gay rights.
I know, yeah.
No other argument changes people's opinions, but when people know us, they support us. So it's so important to be honest. And coming out doesn't mean just coming out gay. If you're, coming out means being, I think, honest about who you are, and we should we should try to live honestly, and it's not easy. And anyway, I was telling a story, and this guy says, can you assure me that I'll be safe if I live honestly? And I said, no, I can't, because you might not be.
Right.
But it's a better way to be.
Well, Steve, I really want to thank you for taking the time on your Saturday, and
thanks,
I hope
George.
To meet you face-to-face next time on the Phoenix. I want to remind my listeners, if they go to tellthetruthfaster.com, in about a week you can hear the show or have your friends listen to the show in my archives. You can hear any show I've done over the last 3 years in the archives. And this is Stuart Altrue on KXAM 1310 in Phoenix saying thank you for listening. And next week I'll be out of town at my nephew Gabriel's bar mitzvah in Atlanta, so you'll be hearing a repeat maybe of even this show. So thank you for listening, and thanks for your support. And Steve, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Stuart. You too.
Bye. That I heard of once.